And good morning. It's 18 minutes after 8 a.m. You are tuned into your community radio station, Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Joining me in the studio, I have a couple of scientists here from the Sitka Sound Science Center. Matt Bracken and Cascade Sorty are scientists in residence fellows for the month of July. And Tori O'Connell directs the program. She's here as well. Welcome to Morning Edition, everybody.
Thank you.
Well, Matt and Cascade, welcome to Sitka for the month of July. You are both scientists at University of California, Irvine. And can you tell us what you study and what you'll be studying here? Matt?
So most of my research is devoted to understanding the functional consequences of biodiversity change. So what happens to an ecological system as the number of species in that system changes? And an ecological system functions a lot like a community of people or an engine, in that if you lose parts from that system, it doesn't work the same way. So it's not as efficient, it's not as productive, it doesn't work as well. And so what I'm trying to understand in marine systems, and we're going to be doing work on that here in Sitka, is what happens to these systems as species are lost from them.
And Cascade, what do you do? What do you study?
So you'll see how Matt's and my work connect. So I'm really interested in how climate change affects the species that are in a system. And I've been interested for a while in how changing environmental conditions affects different species. Some species do better, say, in warmer temperatures. Some do better in cooler temperatures. And as the climate has been warming, we see changes in which species are, you know, becoming more numerous or less numerous. And so Matt and I are kind of tag teaming here, where I'm looking at, in Sitka, you know, if the temperatures go up just a little bit or the ocean chemistry changes just a little bit, how will the species here in the intertidal systems change? And then we're putting that together with Matt's interest to see how those changes in the species composition will affect how the system is functioning. So things like the productivity of the system and nutrient cycling, things like that. So we're really kind of putting it all together here and into a big project.
Your husband-wife team, do you usually travel together and study together?
We've traveled a lot together. Typically when we do, though, it's to work on one or the other's project. And so, you know, I'm helping Matt cart mussels around. He's helping me with my physiological studies. And this is, I'd say, about the first time that we have really collaborated as a team where we're both putting our, you know, interests together into one project.
Well, what caused you to choose to do that this year at the Sitka Sound Science Center?
So one of the things I've been thinking about a lot in terms of biodiversity change, there's a history of this type of work that stretches back. Scientists have been looking at it for decades, motivated really by the fact that biodiversity is changing on global scales, and there's this quest to understand how that's going to affect how systems work. But the vast majority of that research has looked at random species loss. So people have gone into a system and said, all right, you know, what happens if we randomly assemble two or four or six or eight species together? How does that change the productivity of this system? But that doesn't really answer the question that all of this seeks to answer, which is the fact that diversity is changing on a global scale, and most of that diversity change is caused by humans. And so we call this project sort of the ABC project, the Anthropogenic Biodiversity Change Project, because what we're really trying to get a handle on is how human-mediated changes in biodiversity are then affecting how these systems work. And so that's how it really merges our interests.
Now, why is Sitka and the Sitka Sound Science Center a good destination for you to do this work together?
It presents a really neat opportunity to access local intertidal sites. I've always been interested in what's going on in Southeast Alaska marine systems. I grew up in Petersburg, and so that, you know, these are the types of systems that I grew up turning over rocks, playing around on the beach. So the ability to return to these systems and study what's going on here from a scientific perspective is really special to me for that reason. It's also, the further north you go, the more impacted systems are by global change, especially by warming. And so studying what happens in a system further north than we usually go can provide some really unique and important insights into how global change is affecting marine systems.
And then at the same time, you know, it the systems here may be more impacted by global change, but they're also, one could argue, less impacted by humans already. So we come from Orange County, where the visitation to intertidal sites is really immense. You know, I mean, you just have thousands of people on the beach in a day. And so there's a lot of impacts of trampling and just direct impacts of humans there. And so one of the things that we're able to look at here, especially when we're doing our initial surveys out there, is a fairly intact system, I would say, which is really amazing and a wonderful place to do our work.
So you're going to be tramping around doing experiments with local tide pools. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so we are going to set this up as what we call a factorial experiment because we're interested in two things, global warming and ocean acidification, or the changing pH of the system. And we're interested in how those two things could work together. And so we're going to put these tide pools that we're studying into different groups. So we'll have a control group where we don't make any change to the tide pools. And then we'll have tide pools where we increase the temperature a little bit, tide pools where we add CO2 to the tide pool and decrease the pH a little bit, and then tide pools where we do both. And the amount that we're going to be changing these conditions is really, really tiny, both because it's logistically really difficult to change the conditions out there, and also because we want to know, you know, what's likely to happen in the next 50 years. So if we increase the temperature by about 1 degree Fahrenheit, you know, humans might hardly feel that change, but these systems that are so kind of honed in on the typical change in temperatures might actually respond to that, and our previous research suggests that it will. And then we'll be decreasing the pH by just about 1 or 2 tenths of a unit. And how are we doing this? This is actually pretty interesting and the product of a lot of work that we've been doing to get ready for this trip over the last few months. So I've really been working on the methods for increasing temperature, and it's really actually hard to increase the temperature of tide pools. In fact, my 8-year-old son suggested maybe we could pour a little boiling water in or something. You know, that might be a way to do it. But we ended up finding some battery-operated warmers, little hand warmers that people might use if they're out on a fishing boat or something, you know, keep your hands warm. And so we'll be putting these in watertight boxes and submersing those in the tide pools. But this does require that we go out every day and change out the warmers. And then, Matt, you should tell about the pH. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so one of my graduate students and I put our heads together. He was interested in trying to figure out how affecting, you know, how adding carbon dioxide would affect tide pool systems. And we wanted a way that was inexpensive and easily replicated across, you know, a large spatial scale. And like I said, it could be done on a graduate student budget. And what we finally came up with, we've looked into the aquarium literature, and people who are trying to maintain the proper carbon balance in aquariums have figured out that if you put yeast and sugar and water and a little bit of baking soda in a bottle, or in this case, we're going to use watertight boxes, the yeast, just like they do when they make bread rise, they generate carbon dioxide. And so we can use that as a little reactor or generator to bubble carbon dioxide through an aerostone into these tide pools. So we'll be putting those yeast reactors out on the beach, out on the shore, and letting them do their work and add carbon dioxide into these tide pools.
So you'll be working on this every day. Will you be visiting tide pools that citizens may visit as well?
I was out there this morning. I looked at tide pools at Magic Island, at John Brown's Beach, and we may look at some other ones. And I do want to stress that if anyone who's listening is ever out there and sees us at low tide working on our experiments or even wants to get involved, definitely come by, ask us what we're doing. We're glad to use that as a platform for engaging the public and talking about our research.
And you're comfortable with children because you have your own, right?
Exactly. And in fact, in terms of directly involving kids in our work and teaching them about science, there are some upcoming opportunities. For example, on Saturday, we'll be offering a program to kids at the library at 10:30. So any and all kids, do you remember the age ranges?
I think it was about 5 to 10, age mm-hmm. 5 to 10, so elementary school age.
Elementary school age kids. We'll do some reading and some activities and get you guys excited about science.
Great. And you brought your kids with you, right?
Yes, we have two boys. One turns 1 year old tomorrow, so we're having his first birthday here, a Sitka birthday. And then we have an 8-year old. And so you'll see both of them around with us. And they both love to talk about science, too. So
Finley doesn't talk much.
Well, okay.
But the 8-year old sounds like he's helping you out.
He's really helpful. He has been for a couple of years. Yeah, he'll take data for me. You can definitely go out in the intertidal, give us methodological suggestions about boiling water, that sort of thing.
I've taught him how to count snails in tide pools. You know, he's been acknowledged in scientific papers that both of us have written. So
perfect.
And he will be taking our marine science camp, correct?
Right. Right.
So he'll be doing the marine science camp at the Sitka Sound Science Center, Tori, right?
That's right.
Can you tell us a bit about a bit more about how the public may be able to connect with these scientists, with Matt and Cascade, and what's coming up at the Science Center?
Yes, well, besides the library talk on Saturday morning, Matt will be giving a talk Sunday evening at 5 on fisheries, right? Biodiversity, productivity, and the ecosystem-based management of fisheries, and that's geared towards the public. So that's 5 this Sunday. And then Cascade will be giving a coffee talk at the Mill Building next to the Science Center Monday at 8 a.m., a short talk, and then she'll lead an intertidal walk out by the Sage Beach. And I think Taylor White will be helping her with that. So that's this Sunday and Monday. So we're excited about that. And then they're also going to be helping with the Marine Science Camp next week.
And is there still room for students to sign up for that camp?
You know, I was just thinking I should have found out. But if you call the Science Center at 8878, I can certainly look and let you know. We're really excited to have them here. You know, Sitka has a long history of intertidal research going back to the 30s when Jack Calvin and Ed Ricketts did intertidal surveys here for their work between Pacific tides. And so to have preeminent scientists, we had Pete Raimondi and Melissa Miner here 2 years ago, and they'll be coming back in September, and now Matt and Cascade. So we're very excited about continuing this legacy of really important research in the intertidal here.
And again, if anyone needs more information about anything, what's the phone number at the Science Center?
747-8878. We are under construction, so don't be frustrated by the phone system. You can also just come on in and look for me there.
And don't be intimidated by the Tyvek that's covering
that? That's right. Great things come in packages like that, and we'll probably have our building reveal here by at the end of the summer.
Okay. And then you're also, of course, there's a website, SitkaScienceCenter.org. Great.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, everyone, for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, I've been speaking with Matt Bracken and Cascade Sorty. They are a husband-wife team from University of California, Irvine, here with the Sitka Sound Science Center, studying intertidal life and climate change, and also Tori O'Connell, who runs the SURF program.